Acts chapter 18, we're nearing the end, at least of Acts anyway. By way of review, where we've been the last couple of weeks, remember Paul is under arrest by the Romans. He's in custody by the Romans. He's actually being protected from the Jews. We saw there were several riots the Jews had. They tried to kill Paul several times. There were two assassination plots from the Jews, actually from the Jewish leadership. And three times he appeared before the Jewish Sanhedrin, and every time it ended up in either a stalemate or a riot. And it looked like Paul was going to be handed over to the Jews, so he appealed to Caesar. Paul, being a Roman citizen, could do that. But by appealing to Caesar means now he has to go stand before Caesar. That was a Roman citizen's right. If you didn't think you're getting a fair trial, you could appeal to Caesar, and now they have to take you to Rome, where Caesar is, to hear your case. So we saw that not all being done. Paul spent 2 years in jail in Caesarea. We saw that a couple weeks ago. And then they finally get him out of there and put him on a ship, and he set sail for Rome. Now, we've covered this. Now, I'm just going to review it because we've covered this now over the last 3 weeks. I call it the disastrous yet miraculous sea voyage. Remember what's happening here. Now, remember, Jesus said to Paul earlier, you're going to Rome. He also said to Paul, you're going to stand before Caesar. In fact, even before that, Paul said he must go to Rome. Paul, in the spirit, knows that God is sending him to Rome. In fact, he wrote to the Roman church, he said, on my way to Spain, I'm going to stop by and see you. He had every intention of going to Rome. So, number one there in your sheet. Ignoring Paul's experience warnings about trying to sail during winter. Remember, it's late in the season, it's late September. The Mediterranean Sea closes down in that time of the year. From late September until about late February, early March, you can't sail back in those days. You couldn't put a sailing ship out in the Mediterranean to be safe because of all the storms. It's wintertime. You can't do it. But they're going to do it anyway. They're on this grain ship. Remember this Egyptian grain ship? They decide at least to make it as far as, you look at your map there, as Phoenix. They put in the Fair Havens and they try to make it as far as Phoenix. That's on the island of Crete there. But they didn't make it. They should have stayed where they were, Paul said, but they didn't listen to him. Remember, Paul was shipwrecked twice before this. Paul knows something about sailing. Paul knows something about shipwrecks and doesn't want to do it again. But they don't listen to Paul, and they foolishly press on. And, of course, this storm blows up, which I think was satanic. This storm blows up, and they get caught in a violent storm. All attempts at saving themselves fail. They do all kinds of things. They throw stuff overboard, throw the grain overboard, throw the tackle overboard, do this with the anchors and the sails and everything else, but nothing works. And for 14 days, they're driven helplessly along by the storm. They're lost at sea. They don't know where they are. They can't see the sun. They can't see the stars. If you note your map, that squiggly part out there in the middle of the map, that's where they are. They're just being blown by this storm. They have no control. They don't know where they are, where they're heading. It's a very frightening thing, I would imagine. And it says there in verse 20 how they give up all hope for survival. Remember, these are wooden sailing ships. They don't have any engine in them. So they're just driven by the storm. And usually in a situation like this, you would die. Ship's going to sink or break apart, and they're all going to die. That's normally what happens. This happened many times back in those days. And those ships, that's what happened. But then, verse 21 through 26, God sends an angel to tell Paul that all 276 men on board will be spared. It's a big ship. Remember, the angel said to him, God has granted you all those with you. And I said, there's more to those words than just God's going to save their lives. They're going to see some amazing miracles in this sea voyage when they get on land. And God has given them to Paul. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it says, God has granted you all these lives. But the angel told him the ship will be lost. They must run aground on an island. Remember now, look at your map again. They're out in the middle of the Mediterranean where those squiggles are. They have no control over where they're heading. They're just being blown by the wind at random. They have no idea which way they're even facing. Yet the angel says, you're going to run aground on an island. Well, the only island anywhere near there for 500 miles is the island of Malta. See it there on your map? What are the odds of just being driven at random 500 miles through the ocean that could crash land right on the island of Malta? That's exactly what happens. So you know God is always in charge of the storm. He rides the storm, the Old Testament says. Going on, after Paul stops an attempted escape by the crew, they're probably Egyptian or Roman Egyptians. They try to abandon ship and get on a lifeboat. But Paul sees them doing that, and he reassures them. And he stops that. He tells the Roman officer, make them stop. You have to stay on board or we can't be saved. Then Paul reassures them that God has promised that not one of them will be lost. And then Paul then eats and praises his God in front of them all. Remember, it's the middle of the storm. It's the middle of the night. But they haven't eaten 14 days. And it says they were very encouraged. Literally in the Greek there says they were cheered up. Paul tells them, God has promised me none of you are going to lose your lives. Eat something. You're going to need your strength. And they get very encouraged by that. Then at Malta, again, look at the island there, the island of Malta. The ship runs aground, just as the angel said it would, and begins to break up. The nose of the ship dives into a sandbar, and the storm is so violent, the ship starts breaking apart. It's a wooden ship. It starts coming apart. So they all abandon ship, and the Roman officer says, everybody just get to shore as best you can. Now think about that. They're in a serious, massive storm. It's so massive, it's breaking the ship to pieces. He tells everybody, just try to get to the shore. You know, normally, someone's going to drown. Someone's not going to make it. Yet, all 276 make it to shore. Just as God said they would. Just as God promised Paul would happen. And, of course, when they get to shore, they're greeted by these compassionate Maltesians. The ship runs aground and starts breaking into pieces. But they all make it safely ashore, just as the Lord said they would. When they come ashore, the people who live on the island of Malta must have seen this happening. And they've got a fire already ready for them. And they're greeted by these guys, these Maltesians. They welcome them. So they're on land now. They've all been. Remember, think what effect this would have on the Roman soldiers, the rest of the prisoners, the ship's crew. They thought for sure they're hopelessly lost. They're all going to die. Here's this weird Jew telling them, don't worry, my God told me you're all going to make it. They probably laughed at him. At least some of them probably did. Yet here they are all on shore, safe. The ship's out there in the reef, broken to pieces. It's a miracle. This never happens. Even if somehow you were sailing this ship and somehow you made it to shore, 276 men, not one of them drowns. God preserved them because he told them he would. He told Paul he would. I've given them to you, Paul. And they come ashore. Then we saw in chapter 28, they're on shore, they're warming themselves by the fire. Paul grabs a handful of sticks, and out comes this viper. Now the word actually is a snake, but it's called a beast, meaning it's poisonous, very poisonous. In fact, we know that because the natives who live on the island expect Paul to drop dead any second. It says that. He's bitten by this snake on the hand, this kind of viper. As soon as that venom reaches your heart, you're dead. Paul just shakes it off into the fire, and nothing happens. Well, it probably hurt his hand, I would imagine, but nothing happens. Imagine what effect that would have on the natives. Seeing, in fact, it says they concluded when they saw the viper hanging off his hand that Paul must be a wicked, wicked murderer because he escaped his shipwreck and now a snake got him. But when Paul just shakes it off into the fire, now they're thinking Paul's some kind of a god. But that's important. We'll get to that in a minute. What God is doing here, in one sense, is building up Paul in the eyes of everybody on board that ship and everybody on board that island. For what happens next. Paul heals the governor's father. It's a guy named Publius. He's that's a Roman name, Greek name. He's a governor on the island of Malta. He greets and takes Paul and his friends in. Publius's father is sick. So Paul heals him. Paul's an apostle. Paul has the sign gifts of an apostle. So he heals him. And then we read that all who were sick on the island were healed. Now think about that. Wow. Malta's an island 18 miles long, 18 miles wide. 18 miles long, 8 miles wide. Don't know what the population was, but Paul spent 3 months there, and he healed everybody. Now imagine what that would do. So I have your sheet there. Remember when Jesus did his miracle? Remember what he said those miracles were for? To validate his message. When you saw him doing those miracles, you knew this man's from God. No one does things that you do. When Paul and the apostles would do these tremendous miracles, they had that power to validate their preaching message. I did some research this week on your sheet there. Note, tradition records that Governor Publius became the first bishop of Malta and led the church for 31 years, being martyred in 125 AD. That comes from one of the early church fathers. And that's not in the Bible, But that's tradition, that this Publius got saved. I mean, Paul healed his grandfather, or his father. And there was a church started on Malta. The last of it says, at least he was there for 31 years. It's quite a story. That's what God is doing. That's what I believe it means when Jesus said, I've given them to you. I'm going to do astounding things in front of them through you, Paul, and then you're going to preach the gospel to them. And some of them are going to get saved, and the church is going to start. And of course, then we saw last time, verse 10 of chapter 28, the natives honor Paul and his companion. In other words, they hold him in very high esteem. You can imagine, if you're on that Roman ship, or that Egyptian ship with his Roman crew, what would you think of a guy like Paul after seeing all this? You're safely on shore exactly as he told you you'd be. You landed on the island exactly as he told you. You would want to hear what this guy has to say. I'm sure some of them were saying, tell me more about your God, Paul.
You'd be my best friend, that's for sure.
I would think so. Tell me more about this God of yours, Paul. I imagine that's what's going on, at least with some of them. That's where we ended last time. In fact, on the island, it says in verse 10, they supplied all their needs. Remember, they lost everything. So now they have nothing. So they supply all their needs for their voyage to Rome. Paul's still going to Rome. Now you're in chapter 20. Let's start picking up verse 11. 28, verse 11. At the end of 3 months, we set sail on an Alexandrian ship which had wintered on the island and which had the twin brothers for its figurehead. After we put in at Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days. From there, we sailed around and arrived at Rigium. And a day later, a south wind sprang up. On the second day, we came to Puteoli. Remember, Luke is writing this. That's the we. Luke is a very accurate historian. And the voyage he's recording here, I could give you all the details that would take a while to do. Are only something an eyewitness would know. He tells you that we went here, then there, then this happened, the winds blew this way. He was on this ship, and he's writing this account. Let's just work through this. This is taking place between February and March of A.D. 61. There's many ways you get to that number. I won't bore you with the math. This is probably the earliest they could sail. This is probably the end of February, very early March. This is when the sea actually opens up again, when winter starts to end. It's still a little risky. Now, from where they're at in Malta, it's 210 miles to Rome. Still a long way to go. It says that he found another Egyptian grain ship. Remember, these ships are huge. In fact, I brought in, just for you, because I'm such a nice guy. We've been talking about this ship now for the last 3 weeks. You pass that around. They found one of these ships intact. It's called the Isis. They were huge. For their day, they were enormous. And there were hundreds of these ships that just went up around the coastline to Rome. Rome got all their grain from Egypt, almost all their grain, on a huge ship like that. These ships were like 2,900 tons they could hold. They were 180 feet long, 45 feet wide, and they weren't 43 inches deep. I didn't fix that mistake yet. But they got on another ship, just like the last ship that sank. These grain ships. There's this nonstop train of these ships going to Rome when the season opens up. So they find one going that way, and they hop on it. I guess, imagine these Roman officers could commandeer any ship they wanted. So they're on this ship again. Notice it says, Luke adds this note. Verse 11. At the end of 3 months, we set sail on an Alexandrian ship which had wintered at the island and which had the twin brothers for its figurehead. Remember, Luke isn't stupid. You know, everything in here has a reason why Luke includes that. Remember, most of those ships, you notice that one has a big dove at the one end or a big swan. Most of these ships had some kind of an emblem on the front. And Luke mentions it had the twin brothers. Now what that's all about, this was a wooden carving on the brow of the ship. In fact, I went online, several of these are in museums now, exactly like Luke's describing here. Twin carvings of two guys, Castor and Pollux. If you know anything about astronomy, the constellation Gemini, the two main stars are Castor and Pollux, the twins. These guys were twins. Roman legend said, Greek legend said, that these two boys are the sons of Zeus and an earth woman. Actually, she was the queen of Sparta. And they were very mighty warriors and fought in many battles. They're considered to be protectors of the sea. And so they had this carving on the front of this ship of these two brothers. Luke just points that out. But I have your sheet there. Luke may be pointing out the irony of this, as these two were supposed to be the Greek gods who protected the innocent. Now, I don't know if that's why he's mentioning this, but it might have struck Luke as kind of funny that we have these two gods, these two Greek false gods, because they're the ones who supposedly protect the innocent, which Paul is. I don't know about how he's doing that, but Luke goes out of his way to make sure we know that. If you ever looked this up sometime, there are several of these in museums, these two brother carvings off the front of these grain ships. They were very popular in Egypt. Okay, let's read on. Look at verse 12. It goes, after we put in at Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days. Now, Syracuse, you can see it on your map there. They're heading north now. Syracuse is about 60 miles from Malta. That's a day's sailing. I read it's a beautiful port city, very rich in Greek culture, statues, et cetera, and plays and theaters and all that kind of stuff, kind of like Athens. Then let's read on again, verse 13. From Syracuse, we sailed around and arrived at Rhegium. And a day later, a south wind sprang up, and on the second day, we came to Puteoli. Now, let's talk about that. Rhegium, again, you can see it in your map, there are 74 miles north of Syracuse. No, my version says they sailed around. Literally in the Greek, it's they cut loose. There's a lot of debate what Luke means by that. It probably means something like they had some hard sailing. The ESV translates that, we made a circuit. In other words, we kind of go around and kind of around because the winds weren't really with us. That's why it took them a day or two to get up there. But they land in Rhegium, and then, verse 13, on the second day we came to Puteoli. I think I'm pronouncing that right. See that? That's way up there. Notice that second day, they travel a long distance. The Lord's blessing them here. Their sailing's got a whole lot easier. And they make almost a 2 days journey in 1 day, just about. It's 200 miles north up to Rhegium now.
It was a south wind. It says it's a south wind. Yeah. They were heading north. So it's kind of pushing north pretty good.
They had very good sailing. Now, Rhegium, that's modern-day Napoli. Naples, big city in Italy. It's 130 miles from Rome. You've been there?
A couple times.
Yeah? Now this is the end of their sea voyage. Rhegium, or Napoli, was a huge harbor where all these grain ships would get unloaded. That's their destination, to Rhegium, Napoli. So they would get off the ship here and walk the rest of the way. It's like a 5 or 6 day walking journey to Rome. So they're headed, so they're now in Puteoli, which is Naples. Grain ships. There was a strong Jewish presence there. A lot of Jews in that area. And Lorraine asked a question a couple months ago. I put it on your sheet there. This whole area, 18 years later, would be wiped out by the Pompeii volcano. Paul was there 18 years before that happened. But that's, have you ever heard about Pompeii and how that volcano exploded and wiped out the whole coastline there?
Been there.
Just
saw that.
Yeah.
I've been there.
What's that?
Mount Vesuvius.
Yep. That's going to happen about 18 years after this. Paul will be dead by then. And now that they're on land, it's a 5 day walk to Rome. But notice what he does say there again in verse 13. Or verse 14. There we found some brethren and were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and thus we came to Rome. He says, we found some brethren. There's Christians here. Now they're a good 130 miles from Rome, but there's Christians here. Remember, Paul's never been here before, but there's Christians here. He said, we found some brethren. There's a lot of Christians, apparently, around the area of Rome. The gospel had reached Rome many years before this. Again, that's some verses there in your sheet that talk about this. Remember the day of Pentecost? Remember what Pentecost was? Thousands upon, actually millions of Jews came from all around the Roman Empire to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. And you read there in Acts 2:10, there were people from Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt and the ports of Libya belonging to Cyrene, and notice, and visitors from Rome. Most likely some of those Jews who came all the way down from Rome to Jerusalem to do the Passover were there at the day of Pentecost. And some of them got saved. And this is probably how the gospel made it to Rome first. Probably. Don't know that for a fact, but it's very likely that's what happened. Dorcas?
What church was he collecting money for?
Jerusalem.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Rome.
Yeah, that was about 2.5 years, 2 years before this. He brought that gift to Jerusalem, and then that's when he got arrested. But probably in the day of Pentecost, there were Romans, probably quite a few of them in the city. And some of them became Christians at the day of Pentecost, or maybe just shortly thereafter. And when they returned home, they brought the gospel back to Rome. We don't know that, but I'm guessing that's what happened. In fact, it does say they went out spreading the gospel every place they went. Acts 18:2. Paul meets up in Corinth with some more of Romans. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. We talk about this in the book of Hebrews. There was a riot in Rome. The Jews rioted against the Christians there. And the emperor Claudius threw them all out. Jews and Christians, I want everybody out of here. He exiled them all out of there. Well, Priscilla and Aquila were part of this exile. And we don't know if they were saved when they left Rome, but they probably were. But Paul said, I met these two who had just recently come from Rome. Which just tells you there was a Christian presence in Rome. Hebrews talks about that. That's who he's writing to in Hebrews. And of course, Hebrews 13, at the end, he ends the book of Hebrews by writing like this, wherever the author is. Greet all your leaders and all the saints, those who come from Italy send you greetings. He's saying, some of those who ran away from Italy are with me, and they send you all greetings. He's writing to these Christians in and around Rome, the book of Hebrews. And he says, some of your friends from Italy are here with me. That's just telling us the gospel made it to Rome several years before Paul got there. Maybe quite a few years before Paul got there. In fact, the whole book of Romans was written about 3.5 to 4 years before this book in Acts, because there was a huge church there. And he wrote one of the main books of the New Testament. Paul wrote to this church in Rome. So now he's there, and these brothers show up. It's notes there in verse 14. My version says, we were invited. That's a weak translation. Even in the Greek, it's we were prevailed upon. They begged us. They ordered us. Stay with us. Stay with us. So they stayed 7 days there. Now get that. Paul's a prisoner. He's under guard. He's under Roman guard. They allow him to stay with these Christian friends 7 days. I'm sure there's a guard with him the whole time. But the idea there is Paul is being given much freedom and privilege. You see this again later in this chapter. I'm sure the guards had a very high opinion of the Apostle Paul. After all that happened with the shipwreck and everything he did and everything came true and everything they saw on the island of Crete, these Romans saw Paul heal all those people. I'm sure some of them became saints. That was season verses, I think, that prove that later on. But notice the end of verse 14. Luke says, and thus we came to Rome. Paul finally makes it to Rome. He's been talking for the last several chapters about going to Rome. Jesus told him, you're going to Rome. Luke says, finally we arrived in Rome. Now it's been 3 weeks since they left Malta. This whole trip since they left Caesarea probably took about 4 to 5 months when you add it all up. Now Rome, in their day, was the capital of the known world. It was the most important city on earth as far as the Roman Empire. It was the seat of their government. It's where the Caesars were. It's where the palace was. It's where the government was. It's where massive amounts of soldiers. It was a very large city. I don't have any figures on how many people here. It was a big place. Very important place. Everybody knew Rome. Rome was a huge sea trading city with massive amounts of just trade coming in and out and people traveling in and out. Rome was like the crossroads of part of the Roman Empire. Almost everybody came in through Rome at least once in their life. Well, now Paul, Luke, and Aristarchus are there. Rome conquered the Greeks. Rome basically conquered the known world. They built roads, they built cities, they built the aqueducts. I mean, what they call the Pax Romana was famous, the Peace of Rome. They were amazing people. I mean, the Romans were amazing. I mean, today they still have all their, you can go over to Rome, visit what's left, the ruins.
Colosseums.
They built some amazing stuff, Colosseum and aqueducts. But notice here, everything Jesus promised Paul came true against overwhelming odds. I mean, if you were watching this scenario but didn't know how it's going, you would never think Paul's going to make it to Rome. Just go back a few years. How many times was he arrested by the Jews? They tried to kill him several times. They tried to beat him to death outside the gates of Jerusalem. And even before that, there were riots. The Roman soldiers were going to flog Paul almost to death. Yet here he is. You'd never think, looking back, when Paul was in prison, you'd never think he's going there. Then this incredible sea voyage and this storm and everything else, you would never think he's going to make it here. But Jesus said he would. Remember back in chapter 23, while Paul was in prison, and he's in prison because the Romans are trying to save his life and the Jews are trying to kill him. You think it's over for him. He's done. While he's in prison, Jesus appeared to him and said, Paul, you're going to Rome. And here he is. Over 2 years later, but here he is. He was promised on board the ship that night that he and everyone on board would survive that shipwreck. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly how it came out. I'm sure when Paul said that, who do you think believed him? Probably not many. In fact, some of these guys were seasoned sailors. They knew better. We're doomed. In fact, Paul said, this ship's going to be lost because it's going to run aground on an island. That's exactly what happened. Remember, when God says something, it happens. And Jesus said to Paul, through the angel, you must stand before Caesar. He's going to do that. He's going to stand before Caesar. And you know what Paul's going to tell Caesar, I would imagine. So that's, Luke is writing this, it's history. But he's writing this to the churches. Actually, he's writing this to the guy Theophilus, but it's passed around the churches as a great encouragement. They hear about these stories, how God preserved Paul and God kept us. These are all meant to encourage us. And also, on top of that, this is what Paul was praying for a long time. Turn like a page or two to your right to the Gospel of to the Romans, Book of the Romans, chapter 1. Paul desired this, and Paul prayed earnestly for this very thing. Look at Romans chapter 1, verse 8. He begins his letter by talking about this. Romans 1, 8. It says, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, because your faith is being proclaimed throughout the whole world. He's telling these Romans, every time I pray, I thank God for you because I'm hearing about how great your faith is. For God, whom I serve in my spirit in the preaching of the gospel of his Son, is my witness as to how unceasingly I make mention of you, always in my prayers, making requests, if perhaps now at last, by the will of God, I may succeed in coming to you. He prays all the time for this, he says. For I long to see you so that I may impart some spiritual gift to you, that you may be established. That is, that I may be encouraged together with you while among you, each of us by the other's faith, both yours and mine. And that's exactly what's happening here in Putiel, isn't it? Because notice it again there, just a page back in the book of Acts. He says, we're invited to stay with the brethren for 7 days, and thus we came to Rome. They're together. Turn to Romans again. I'm sorry to take it back there to the last chapter of Romans. Paul ends his letter, chapter 16, by saying it even stronger. I'm sorry. Yeah, 16. 15. Don't believe my own numbers. 15:22. Paul mentioned how he's been so busy planting churches where there were none. But Paul said, now that I'm done that work, which is an amazing thing to say, he says in chapter 15, verse 22, for this reason I have often been prevented from coming to you. But now, with no further place for me in these regions, and since I have had for many years a longing to come to you, whenever I go to Spain, for I hope to see you in passing, and to be helped on my way there by you when I have first enjoyed your company for a while, but now I'm going to Jerusalem serving the saints. Just see, here he talked about that gift he's bringing to Jerusalem. But just drop down to verse 28. Therefore, when I have finished this, when I'm done taking this gift to Jerusalem, and have put my seal on this fruit of theirs, I will go by way of you to Spain. I know that when I come to you, I will come in the fullness of the blessing of Christ. Now I urge you, brethren, by our Lord Jesus Christ, by the love of the Spirit, to strive together with me in your prayers to God for me, that I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judah. Meaning, these Jews are trying to kill me. Please pray with me that I can be saved from them and come see you, he's saying. 31, that I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judea, and that my service for Jerusalem may provide acceptable to the saints, so that I may come to you in joy by the will of God and find refreshing rest in your company. That's his prayer. Now, Paul had no idea when he wrote that. I'm going to come to you, a prisoner, a Roman prisoner, through a shipwreck, a snake bite, and et cetera, et cetera. He had no idea when he wrote that, I'm sure, but he says, I'm coming. It's my earnest heart's desire to come see you. And here he is now in Rome. What's that?
Did he ever make it to Spain?
I was just reading this week, one of the early church fathers, I forget his name, says that Paul went to Rome and was released and then went west, was arrested again, and then was martyred. I don't know all the facts on that. I've done more studying. I just read that today, actually. So I don't know if he made it to Spain or not. I don't think so. Do you know anything about that, Paul?
No.
I don't know. I'll look more into that. He wants to go to Spain. Paul has his heart set in Spain. But on my way to Spain, I'm going to stop by and see you for a while. Don't know if he made it to Spain or not. I kind of doubt it. I never read anything that he did. But I'll look into that more.
That's probably the end. What they talk about, the outermost edge of their known world, right? That would be Spain.
Yeah, Spain's pretty much the farthest western end of the Roman Empire. What's that?
Great Britain. The Romans were in Great Britain.
Yeah, that would be north. Yeah, that'd be farther west, I would imagine. But I'm saying Paul knew. In fact, if you read, we're not going to turn there, in Romans 16, Paul knows a lot of people in Rome. Greet so-and-so, greet so-and-so, greet so-and-so. That goes on for 16 verses. Paul knows people in Rome. He knows of them anyway, all right?
How was Paul killed?
Beheaded in Rome. That's what we know. I'll get more into that when we get towards the end of this. Not tonight, though. But now, notice, he spent 7 days. The Romans allow him to spend 7 days with the brothers. Now, look at verse 15 again. And the brethren, when they heard about us, came from there as far as the market of Appius and three inns to meet us. And when Paul saw them, notice, he thanked God and took courage. Notice, first of all, the words Luke uses, as far as. He's emphasizing something here. Word of Paul's arrival was probably spreading through the area. Hey, Paul's here. Probably that the saints back in Regium said, hey, Paul, we just saw Paul. He's heading to Rome. Word to get out. Paul, I'm sure, is a rock star among the Christian church. Everybody who hears about him. Remember, Paul wrote this letter. Paul wrote the letter to the Romans probably about 3 to 4 years before this. So they've had this letter from Paul now for quite a while. But the letter to the Romans is just one beautiful piece of inspired work. It's like one of the high points of the Bible, is the book of Romans. They had this now for several years in their church, passing it around. Probably in late 57 or early 58 during his third missionary journey. He's probably from Corinth. But after receiving such a wonderful letter, you can imagine what they would think about the Apostle Paul. We just long to meet this scholar, this guy who knows the gospel, who loves the Lord. And they would hear of all of his work and all that he's done. Remember his three missionary journeys, how he spread the gospel all throughout Europe? Now they're saying, hey, Paul's here. So the word would spread. So Luke says they came as far as. Now again, these aren't on your map. He says they're the Forum of Appius, or the Market of Appius. Now there's a highway called the Appian Way. It's a major highway heading up to Rome. This forum, or this market, was about 43 miles south of Rome. So Luke is telling us, these brethren came a day's journey, 43 miles, probably on foot, walking to Rome to see Paul. He also mentions there this place called the Three Inns. Now remember, Luke is an eyewitness. He knows the times. The Three Inns was this little town on this Appian Way, that there was apparently a church there. Now the Three Inns, there's a guy named Horace, he's a Greek historian, who said that Three Inns was full of sailors and stingy tavern keepers. That's a record to that place. But what Luke is saying is they came from miles away, north to Rome, hearing that Paul was there. They want to meet with him. They want to encourage him. And we read there, which I love, they're a real blessing to Paul. It says he thanked God and took courage. For the last 5 months, it's just been Paul, Luke, and Aristarchus. Probably on Malta, some got saved, the church was started, but now he's meeting the church. He's meeting these Roman Christians. Mike?
Just a question about what would the Forum of Appius be?
It was a market. A big marketplace. Yeah. Big marketplace. That's what it was. Like my version translates the word market, though it actually is forum. Big marketplace, buying and selling, that kind of thing. But these Christians come north, a day's journey or more and more, to see Paul. And when they get there, they encourage him. Don't ever underestimate how important fellowship is, especially to someone who's hurting. I think, for example, of our brother Tom George in the hospital. Don't ever underestimate what a blessing it is to go see him. When you're having hard times, when you're struggling, like Paul's been through a war here. I'm sure having all these Christians show up and pray with him and bless him and talk with him and just share with him. That is such an uplifting thing to have Christians surround you and get around you. And it's never a good thing to be alone as a Christian. We need fellowship, especially when you're in hard times. Paul doesn't know what he's walking into. And all these Christians that we never met before just show up. And just they share the love and they share Christ and they fellowship. That's a pretty cool thing when you think about it. And then something really neat happens. Look at verse 16. When we entered Rome, Paul was allowed to stay by himself with the soldier who was guarding him. Now get that. Paul's under arrest. He's been under arrest by Rome for the last 2 years. Normally, prisoners go to the prison with all the rest of the prisoners on that boat. Paul is allowed to rent a house. In fact, notice verse 30, how this chapter ends. Luke tells us, and he stayed 2 full years in his own rented quarters and was welcoming all who came to him. Paul is allowed not to go to prison. Roman prisons were pretty crude and horrifying. He was allowed to rent a house. And for 2 years, he's living in this house. I understand he's still under arrest. In fact, notice verse 20. When the Jews come to see him, he says, for this reason, therefore, I requested to see you and to speak with you, for I am wearing this chain for the sake of the hope of Israel. Paul was chained. He couldn't go out. In fact, he's probably chained to this soldier. But get this. Paul is allowed freedom in this home to have visitors. Every day, visitors. And people would come, and Paul could talk. And he's not in prison cell. He's in this house that they're renting. Probably the house is paid for, I'm sure, by the Christians raising money for him and bringing him food and whatever he needs.
They never did mention the charges that they had against him, did they?
No, it's never recorded. Nope, they sent him up here, didn't know what to charge him with. And that's probably what happened. Paul's a very low level, as far as Caesar's concerned, Paul's case is a very low level, very unimportant thing. Caesar has much more better, he would think, much more important things to do. That's probably why he sat there for 2 years before his case was heard. And probably, if the history's right, he was dismissed. Get out of here. He let him go. And then Paul, as was his way, got in trouble again, got arrested again, then later on he got martyred. But get the picture here. God is allowing Paul tremendous freedom in Rome to have visitors. Allowed to stay by himself with a soldier. He's in chains. Now it appears that Luke is there with him because he says we. He's there the whole time. But in fact, if Philemon and Philippians were written during this time, which many think they were, both of those books mention Luke is here with me. Luke, my fellow companion, is here with me, as are others. But note this. Paul had gained such favor with these Roman guards that he wasn't put in prison. He's allowed to rent a home and have free access. That's a neat thing. This was very helpful to the church. This would very much, to have an apostle, not only an apostle, the apostle Paul with you for 2 years, this would greatly strengthen the area. In fact, notice what he does next. We'll cover this next time, Lord willing. In verse 17, after 3 days, Paul called together those who were leading men of the Jews. Paul wastes no time. He's in his house. He sends out, bring me all the synagogue leaders. I'm going to talk to them. And we'll see what happens there next time, Lord willing. But this is neat. He got to meet with the Jews. In fact, it says there in verse 24, some were being persuaded. Some of these Jews get saved. Some of them don't. But notice this too, and get this. I did some research on this. Paul says he's in chains. He'd be assigned a guard. The guard would be chained to him. But get this. In the way the Romans did it, these guards would be changed every 4 hours. So what do you think's happening here?
He's got a lot of converting.
Paul has a lot of people to talk to from the Roman regiment. Think about that. That's pretty neat. That's awesome. God just set this whole thing up. It's all for the sake of the gospel. Jesus is doing all of this. He's having mercy on these soldiers. He's having mercy on the Roman church. He's having mercy on the Jews. He sent Paul there to preach the gospel. He said, soon have mercy on. Of course, Nero never gets saved that we know of, but I'm sure he heard the gospel from Paul. That's a neat thought. What effect do you think that would have? We don't have to guess. Paul mentions this. I've shown these verses before. Let's see them again on your sheet. Philippians 1. Paul's probably writing Philippians from this house in Rome. And he says this. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. He's saying, all this horror stories you heard about how I got here, and you're hearing about I'm in jail, but listen, this has all been good for the gospel. Here's why. So that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard. Now get that. The imperial guard are Caesar's hand-picked soldiers. Because Paul is appealed to Caesar, one of Nero's own hand-picked soldiers would be with him. Because if this guy gets lost, Nero's going to have somebody's head, probably several hundred heads. So Paul said, throughout the whole imperial guard, because every 4 hours, one of these guys gets changed out and changed out and changed out. And you know what Paul's doing. He's talking to every one of these guys.
I bet you some of those guys couldn't wait to come back.
Yeah.
For their next duty.
I'm sure.
I can't imagine that the stories that the Roman soldiers that were on the ship were telling.
Exactly right. They would hear all this.
Yeah.
Imagine surviving a shipwreck, all their comrades, man, how'd you do that? Well, let me tell you what happened. There was this weird Jew on board who, and now they tell this story. You can imagine, Jesus is spreading the gospel. It's so cool to see this, right?
This isn't in the Bible, but it's a thought. It's possible that Cornelius, who was a centurion, prayed for his fellow Roman soldiers.
Wouldn't you think he would?
Yeah.
When he got saved?
Yes.
In fact, Cornelius lived in Caesarea. He was there when Paul was in jail for 2 years, 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, if you got, wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
I can only speculate, but you're right. That's a very good thought. But notice again here, Paul says, the gospel has become known throughout the whole imperial guard. He's not mincing words here. Not just two or three guards. The whole imperial guard know the gospel because of me. Because I'm in jail. Dorcas?
Maybe the guards, they figured it's going to be boring. They're going to just stand there for 4 hours watching him. And then he starts talking to them,
yeah.
And it's like, hey, you know, this is a good way of passing time.
Paul was on fire for the gospel. Everybody he met, he would try to tell him about Jesus Christ. He said that. He's giving his life for the gospel. But notice what it also says. It became known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest. I don't know who that means. All the rest, probably of the Roman guards. Not just the imperial guard, but all the rest of the guards. Someone just, I think you said that about, these soldiers would talk among each other. There's a whole lot of Roman soldiers hearing the gospel. So much so that later on in the same book, Philippians 4, it's on your sheet, Paul says, he's writing this from Rome now. All the saints greet you, notice, especially those of Caesar's household. Now consider that. That means those who live in the palace with Caesar. That may imply even some of Caesar's relatives. They don't know. Caesar would be surrounded by soldiers, by servants, by cooks, by cleaners, by maids, by slaves. And he says, notice that. Those of Caesar's household send you greetings, Philippians. Why? Because they're Christians too. How do you think that happened? Because of Paul. God working through the Apostle Paul. So you see now, when you look back at all this calamity and chaos and violence and what's going on here, this is what Jesus is pushing him toward. This is why Jesus is sending him to Rome. To have mercy on these Romans, on these soldiers, on the church in Rome. It's him running the gospel. Or as he said, I'm going to build my church and the gates of hell can't stop me. I really believe that storm at sea was satanic. That snake was satanic. Satan's been trying to kill Paul for many, many years. Every time he tries it, it doesn't work. It doesn't happen. He's been trying to kill him, but he couldn't do it. And here, Paul is in Rome, and now the gospel is spreading and spreading and spreading. It's an amazing thing to think about. It. Salvation was spreading all throughout Caesar's palace. That's pretty cool. That really is. Now, I don't want to go into the next section because that's going to take too long, so we're going to just close with some thoughts on this. But think this through. After all you've just seen here, one point that stands out very powerfully is God always keeps his promise. Don't ever doubt what he says. You need to read your Bible knowing that. When he says he's going to do something, he does it. Barry.
Why did you entitle one to it? In hope of eternal life, God cannot lie.
Cannot lie. Exactly right. Good point, Barry. When God says he who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, you will be saved if you call on the Lord sincerely. Whatever God says he's going to do, all those prophecies, you can imagine, this was crazy talk on board that ship. But if God said it, it's true. Don't ever doubt these things. I mean, we're in a very real case for faith here, as Lee Strobel says. Don't ever doubt God's promises. Claim them. Believe them, even though it doesn't look like it. You know, when Jesus said to Paul back in that jail cell 2 years ago, you're going to Rome, like, how? How is this going to happen? Here he is.
Too much tribulation we had in the kingdom of God.
Another good verse, Barry. Very good stuff. God always keeps his promises. You can bank on it, build your life on it. What he says is true, Dean.
Even though he was a Roman citizen, to get to see Caesar,
yeah,
had to be governed.
Well, you think about that. Like Dean just said, how else would Paul ever get to see Nero? Paul's a peon. Nero would never even notice a guy like Paul. Paul would never get anywhere near the palace. Yet here he is. Paul would never get anywhere near most of these Roman guards. Yet here he is. The imperial guards, they're the elite guards that guard Caesar's palace. How would he ever get to talk to them? Yet here he is, talking to them every 4 hours. That's pretty cool. That's how our Lord works. Letter B. Every detail of our lives are in his hands. I can't emphasize this enough. I've really been impressed by it. You go back and look at this story. If you were an outsider watching this, not knowing what's going on, you'd think, Paul, you became a Christian. Your life just fell apart. Your life is awful. You're being beaten. You're being chased to death. They're trying to kill you. They have assassination plots against you. You're being arrested. You're going to be flogged. You're this, you're that. Your life is falling apart, Paul. You're a wreck. Yet every detail of that, including this shipwreck, the snake bite, all of that is driving the gospel forward. Every detail of your life is in his hands. All this chaos, all this danger, all this trouble was completely controlled by Christ to bring about this end. Dorcas?
Wasn't there a verse in the Old Testament about snakes biting you and they won't hurt you?
That's in the end of Mark. Mark 16.
Oh, Mark 16.
This is why, for example, in the next couple centuries, why Rome becomes the center of the Christian church. Because there's so many Christians here in and around Rome, that's where the church becomes like the church headquarters. Of course, that goes corrupt in a couple of centuries, but that's where the church was founded and started, in Rome, because of the Christians there. And so many of them, Paul spent 2 years there. You can imagine what went on. Letter C. This is kind of a repeat of letter B. Even when things look hopeless or impossible, he is still working out his plan. You need to know this. Nothing ever happens to a child of God without some purpose. We know that because Romans 8 says, all things work together for good to those who are called according to his purpose. When God calls you into his kingdom, you know that everything that happens to you, shipwrecks, jail, assassination plots, snake bites, everything is sent through God's hand to you for a good purpose. We know, Paul. That's an amazing truth. That truth alone, that promise alone should change everything about your life. Because I know we face hard times. We face trouble. We face problems. We face sickness. And you think, why is this? But if you're a child of God, everything in your life is orchestrated by a God who knows exactly what he's doing. We need faith to believe that. I need faith to believe that. We need to trust him more. Everything that happened, even these hopeless, horrible things, Lord, why is this happening to me? If you're a child of God, it's not happening for a bad reason. He's making everything work together for your good and his glory. And that's true, Dean.
It reminds me of the life of Joseph.
Exactly right.
You sent it for bad. God sent me for good.
And think what he just said. All the terrible things that happened to Joseph. Being mocked and hated by his brothers. They try to kill him. They sell him. Jail. Many, many, many years later. Just to save the people of God alive. And Joseph said, you meant it for evil. God meant this all for good. That's powerful. You need to realize that. We lose sight of that, then circumstances tend to think, well, why is this happening? You get depressed, you get angry, you get scared. God is in control. Exactly in control. Letter D. God's great love for his elect is demonstrated by the lengths he's willing to go to spread the gospel. God wanted the gospel to come to Rome. God determined Paul's going to get there. Now, Paul wrote that letter. They were there before, but God was sending Paul to Rome. God wanted to save these Roman guards. God wanted to save people in Caesar's household. And he's sending Paul to do it. This is what sovereign grace looks like. God's electing love and sending the gospel out. That's what we should pray for missionaries and pray that God's gospel goes forward around the world through all these dark places. Don't be afraid of Islam. Don't be afraid of Hinduism. Don't be afraid of communists. God, through his Spirit, can easily break into those places and start just saving people as he has chosen. Like you see here, who would have thought the gospel would come to the palace guard under Nero? And it did, because God sent it there. See?
Wasn't there a verse in one of the other books where it said, don't be discouraged?
Yeah, that was Corinth. Paul got there and he was scared because he'd been beaten up now several times. Jesus appeared to him and said, don't be afraid, Paul. I have many people in this city that you're going to give the gospel to and they're going to get saved. No one's going to hurt you. But this is what sovereign grace looks like. This is happening right now today, all over the world. The Holy Spirit is working in all these dark places and all these places that you think they're never going to get saved. And you hear it all the time. In the Middle East now, in Islamic countries, there's great revivals. In Iran right now, I mean, there's great revivals going on. You don't hear it in the news. But it's happening all over the world.
China,
North Korea. I just heard this week there are several hundred thousand Christians in North Korea. Imagine that. You wouldn't think there'd be more than 10. There's several hundred thousand. Of course, they're all underground, hiding, but they're there. These things don't stop the Lord. Letter E. There is nothing sweeter than Christian fellowship, especially when going through difficulty. When a Christian's hurting, the rest of us need to come around them and encourage them. Love them. Remind them of how great our Savior's love is. Remind them how great your salvation is. When someone's in a hospital or someone's sick or someone's going through a loss or someone, whatever it is, fill in the blank. There's nothing sweeter for a Christian to have other Christians come around and say, man, I love you. I'm praying for you. Tell them about how much Jesus loves them. Tell them about how great, how safe they are in his hands. Remind them. You forget that stuff when you're in trouble. You forget these things when you're going through hard times. Some other brother or sister can say, hey, listen, let me remind you how great our Savior is. Don't ever underestimate. There's nothing sweeter than that. And of course, I have a great quote here from Charles Spurgeon. To gather up all in one the calamities of earthquake, the devastations of storm, the extirpations of war, and all the terrible catastrophes of plague have only been co-workers with God, his slaves, compelled to tug the galley of divine purpose across the sea of time. Only Spurgeon talks like that. Only Spurgeon can say. He's saying all these disasters that we think are so terrible are only God's servants carrying out his purpose across the ages. And it is. I'm sure, I believe, when we finally get to heaven, he's going to allow us to look back and look at, here's why I did that. Here's why I allowed this to happen. It's going to blow your mind what he has done, what he's doing right now. See?
It's like we pray more ahead of time doing the good.
Yeah. Yep. This isn't over. The rest of this chapter tells us some more amazing things happen while Paul's in Rome. It's some neat stuff. Any more questions or comments? Pastor Paul, would you close in prayer, please?